Hi, and welcome to On and Off, our podcast covering the on-premise and off-premise beverage alcohol industry. I'm Melissa Dowling, editor of Cheers.
And I'm Kyle Swartz, editor of Beverage Dynamics Magazine. Today, we're going to be talking about the rise of RTDs and other industry trends and data with David Jackson, Chief Operating Officer for the National Alcohol Beverage Control Association, also known as NABCA. This is the official organization representing the 17 states and jurisdictions that operate with a government control model.
So thank you for joining us, David. Let's jump right in. On the subject of RTDs, or ready-to-drink beverages, also known as canned cocktails, what data is NABCA seeing right now in terms of trends and sales?
We're seeing really enormous growth in the RTD section or category that at this point, virtually all other categories other than tequila have been in decline. RTDs have really continued to grow during the other category decline. So at this point, it hasn't really slowed down other than maybe from the high 30s into the high 20s in total dollars coming in. And we're seeing that even though some of our states no longer carry the lower proof products. So it shows some states are really going over and above that.
Now, you brought up a lot of things that we're seeing as well. Obviously, the chief point being that RTDs continue to grow. Are there any brands in particular you're seeing, or any brand winners that have emerged?
Yeah, well, there's a couple. And really, the top five brands make up 71% of the total business, or 76% of the total business. If we looked at it a year ago, those same top five brands were only 71% of the business. So really the growth is coming within that top five group. It's even more obvious when we get to on-premise where two brands represent nearly 80% of the business.
Wow. Do you want to name the brands, or is this?
Sure. The top five brands in across total control states, and we also have Montgomery County, which is the 18th jurisdiction. The biggest one is High Noon, followed by Stateside, Cutwater, Absolute, and Monaco.
Hmm. Does NABCA distinguish between RTDs and RTS, or ready-to-serve beverages?
We do, and we do that through one of the categories that comes through the TTB with canned cocktails. So everything falls within that cocktail group. The RTD is a little more challenging because unless it specifically says RTS or ready to serve on the label, it's a little hard to try to categorize that. So there are products like On the Rocks and things like that, definitely a ready-to-serve product, but then there are lots of others that may not have anything on it that is still a Manhattan or that type of product that is ready-to-serve. And if you really want to take it to an extreme, the products that were around even 20 years ago, the Kahlua mudslides and things like that, they would all fall within that category. And so it's a little hard to determine the fact that it's not in a can necessarily. Does that make it not a RTD? A little hard to say. The data that we're looking at when we talk about canned RTDs is truly it's in a can, and it doesn't really matter what the proof is. You know, the proof ranges from as low as 3 or 4 up into the teens.
Right. I'm not sure if this is a thing really, but I would think of RTS as like multiple servings in a big bottle of a cocktail that you'd pour at home. And it always felt to me like a little more off-premise than serving something, you know, single serving. But I don't know if that's really a thing.
No, it pretty much is. I would say that the RTSs are definitely more off-premise or at-home consumption in comparison to what we're now seeing. Nearly, you go to bars and you see the amount of canned cocktails, whether it's malt-based or spirit-based in those bars is, quite a large selection.
Yeah.
You brought those Kahlua mudslides. Oh, boy. I think my mother single-handedly in the 90s and early 2000s kept that brand in growth mode. The amount of Kahlua mudslide RTSs that my mother and her girlfriends drank together while hanging out. Oh, my goodness. That was just ubiquitous in my house. You brought up a couple of other RTD trends I wanted to touch a little bit more on. Namely, one that I've definitely seen a lot of recently is the higher proof, the move towards higher proof. I have some thoughts on this, but before I expound, what are you seeing with the higher proof RTDs?
Well, we're definitely seeing some that are coming into the market now. And for a couple of different reasons. Some of the states where the low proof is going through a beer distribution system, that opens the door for some of the higher proof products to go through the state system. And that's not necessarily just in control states, but you've got products like Night Owl, which is an espresso martini that's 12% alcohol. And it's really a little bit different. It's not like sitting down and having a high noon. It's more of a, I don't know how many espresso martinis you would drink, but I'm sort of limited at one and preferably before dinner, not trying to stay awake and at 2 o'clock in the morning. But those type of products are really, I think, seeing some growth, including in the on-premise.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what else I think of when I think of the high proof RTDs is these things are just moving more and more towards actual cocktails. You know, people think when they buy them, when these came out and they were 5% ABV, I think people thought, great, you know, the convenience factor in the can and all of that, but then they started drinking them and it's 5% ABV. That's, you know, that's on the lower end. When I think a cocktail, they think of something that's at least over, you know, 7 or 8%. And now you're seeing a lot of RTDs come out at 8%. So I think we're slowly kind of getting to the point where these are literally just the same cocktail experience you would get in a can.
Correct. Correct. And it's hard to distinguish that we really don't look at the proof level when we're looking at on-premise and off-premise, or we haven't at this point, but it's something that maybe we should take a little bit more focus towards.
What do you think the demo is for these products? I'm assuming it has to be pretty large if the growth is, well, so large.
When you say demo, can you explain what you
Who,
mean?
what
Oh,
consumer?
sorry, the demographic for it. Historically, it was young. I'm not sure that's the case anymore
Hmm.
because what I've seen when it's been on premise, and this is just from my own point of view, is people are buying them sometimes because of the low calorie, much the same as some of the low calorie beers or non-alc beers that have incredibly low calorie and
Yeah.
still have a good taste to it. So I think that's probably in their advantage that beer at this point, even with the standard light beers, probably double the calorie of some of these RTDs, whether they're malt based or spirit based.
Yeah, it seems to me that the demo for these is just everybody at this point. Everybody I know is drinking RTDs all the time in a lot of different forms, but at the end of the day, they're all RTDs. What do you see next for the category? How much growth ahead? I mean, obviously, it seems like we're in consolidation mode, which a lot of people were predicting for a while that the largest players would eventually emerge. What are your thoughts as we look out a year from now in RTDs?
It's a little hard to say. If you go to any of the trade shows where we're promoting these brands, and WSWA was a good example, there were a large number of RTDs, but probably a quarter of the floor space was taken with the cannabis THC
Yeah.
beverages, which are not legal everywhere. That doesn't necessarily mean they're not available, but some of them have gone through the beer distribution system, some of them going through normal wine and spirit wholesalers, depending on the market. If there was a threat to the RTDs, I would see it being in that category. And the challenge there is those range from as low as 3 milligrams of THC to 50.
I know. And
And
we talk about
50, one can would put the four of us under. That's for sure.
we talk about this a lot on this podcast. This is a common theme in the last years, the growth of THC CBD beverages. And I that you just made the exact point that I make every single podcast, which is the wide range in THC percentage in these products. And my fear being that consumers don't yet understand it. I mean, the consumer knows the difference between 5% ABV and 15% ABV. Do they know the difference between 3% CBD, excuse me, 3% THC and 10% THC, or like you said, good Lord, the 50 a milligram, not percent, milligram. These are all in milligrams. Excuse me. I'm going too many math things going on Monday morning. But yes, milligram. And yeah, you're right. I did a big retailer road trip, and I apologize. I tell this story every freaking podcast at this point. But I did a retailer road trip last fall, and the amount of 50 milligram products I saw was eye-opening in stores in Wisconsin, Illinois, and other states. And the retailers are telling me they couldn't keep the 50 milligram products in stock. They sold out that fast. There's people buying these things and taking them. I mean, I hope they're not leaving wherever they are when they consume them. My goodness.
And that's a little bit of the problem that there's no regulation or any way
Yeah.
for somebody gets in a car afterwards to be able to check anything. The other part, if it goes through the normal liquor store distribution system, I think it's a lot safer. Because we do have data that shows that state-run liquor stores have a higher compliance rate for underage and such.
That's
So if
good.
it's not going through the normal system and it ends up in gas stations
Yeah.
or convenience stores, that really changes the game a little bit as to who may have access to it, be it either legally or non-legally.
Yeah, absolutely agreed. And that's another point we make a lot on this podcast, is the people who should be selling and regulating these products are the same people who are selling and regulating alcohol, because they know how to handle it safely. They know how to handle it securely. They know how to keep it out of the hands of the wrong consumers. So I couldn't agree with you anymore. 100%
Right.
agreed.
One of the challenges, especially with the on-premise, really is, overconsumption. You're there selling alcohol, and if you're adding these products, it's harder to tell when someone has had too much of THC and CBD products. And also, talk about this a lot, the time that it takes to kick in.
Yeah.
It's a delayed reaction, and all of a sudden you've had someone that's had way too much, and it's just not something that's really talked about that much, I think.
My understanding is the efficacy on the THC beverages is faster than gummies, for example,
Correct.
but certainly not the same deal as smoking.
Correct.
And liquor has a slight delay in it as well. But at this point, I don't see them being on-premise purchases for the same reason. You don't know what that efficacy is going to be.
Yeah.
At the WSWA conference, they had one of the buyers from Marriott saying, unless things totally change and all the competitors put them in, that they would not introduce THC beverages into Marriott. And I have known other people that produce the THC beverages that say, their aim is home consumption, not
Yeah.
on premise. Not knowing the impact it's going to have on you, where I think anybody that has been, not that's over 21 and has had some relationship with alcohol knows that what the impact from one beer is to two
Yeah.
beers, or a glass of scotch or bourbon.
Couldn't agree more. Yeah, no, when you consume one of the cannabis beverages, it takes about 15 minutes for that beverage to kick in, the psychotropic effects. And when you consume an edible, it's more like 45 minutes. So that's an enormous difference. And when you smoke, it's right away. If you were to consume it via smoking, you would feel the effects pretty much as quickly as you would feel the effects of drinking an alcoholic beverage within minutes, if not immediately. But yeah, consuming beverage 15 minutes, edible 45 minutes, smoking immediately. And those are three very different time to feeling the effects. So again, all the more reason that these things need to be controlled a little bit tighter. And yeah, totally agreed. At home consumption. I know there's some on-premise instances in places like Denver that really kind of push the boundaries of this.
The
Otherwise.
interesting thing, Denver is not a legal THC beverage state, even though they're one of the footprint cannabis states.
That
So
is interesting.
WSWA was in Denver, and they couldn't sample the products, even though a
Huh.
quarter of the floor space was dedicated to the products.
Huh. That is weird. That is weird. But there's no doubt that the THC CBD products are booming right now. Again, when I took that trip in the Midwest, I saw retailers were telling me that their THC CBD sections, beverage sections, were 5Xing, 10Xing. I had a major retailer from Wisconsin text me last week that sales of THC CBD beverages are overtaking sales of beer. Or at least craft beer, I believe. So these things are absolutely booming. Chicago, everywhere I went, they were in the cold case. You buy them and consume them and move on with your day. I mean,
Yeah,
it's a
no,
whole
that's
new ball game.
so Paul
Don't
Papsak,
buy
who
any.
runs the municipal control stores in Minnesota, said just prior to Christmas in December that some of the brands were outselling some of the RT, the major RTD brands.
I believe it. I believe even here in Connecticut, and I make this point every podcast, I apologize, but we're capped at 3 milligrams. We only sell 2.5 to 3 milligrams. So the lowest of the low end. Retailers can't keep them in stock. They're flying off the shelves. Every time I'm in a liquor store, I see somebody buying these products. And it's kind of like with RTDs, the demo is everybody. There's not like a specific demo. It seems like a lot of people buying it. I see people coming in, dressed in suit and ties, buying these things and buying them in multiples, buying them for all their buddies, buying them to stock up. So these things remain primary products, primary growth movers in 2025. There's no doubt about it. You mentioned tequila is still growing. Any concerns with tequila, especially as we move into the tariff phase of this presidential administration?
The on again, off again, on again, off
Yeah,
again
move
tariffs.
in and out, in and out.
They're the ones
Yes,
that
that
you're
one.
So, for all of us who are in the industry, I don't think anybody's actually got any idea what's going to happen.
No idea.
It's on a, the only thing I would say is that I think the larger companies have brought and tax paid an enormous amount of tequila and Canadian whiskey across the border, so it's already here and tax paid.
Yeah.
So the impact wouldn't be immediate, but at this point, we don't know what's going to happen with it. Tequila is still strong. It's probably come down a little bit in price because we know that that's happening, in Mexico, whereas there was a real shortage of production 3 years ago. It's now sort of swung the other way. So I think we're going to see some good value out of tequila and some great products coming through.
We've been hearing a lot about smaller size packaging with alcohol, just different size packaging. Sometimes it's going larger, but usually smaller. I think some of it may be pricing, but also people just drinking less and looking for, different options or more trial size things so they don't have to commit. Are you seeing that as well?
We're seeing some of it. Yeah, 50 mils have always been very strong, especially in a trial period. If somebody wants to try something, they don't have to buy a 750 mil bottle. And that's occurred with the 375s as well. So, yeah, we are seeing some of that.
I was just going to say, I don't remember if it was specific to wine, but didn't they just release a bunch of new sizes? New
They have.
sizes.
The original ones were 700, which is the global standard. The US was really the only country doing the 750s. 700, rest of the world, 720, which is Japanese whiskey and sake. Then, if you take that to the next extreme, instead of 375, it becomes 350. So that became legal. And then they've allowed some other ones, a 3 liter product, which, those bottles have been around but weren't legal. They just didn't have a filler in them. They're great for sitting behind a bar if you've got a gigantic bottle of Patron or something just as decoration, which champagne bottles have been doing forever. So it's probably fair that they bring that in. But then there have been some other ones that you've got to wonder a little bit about. And the transition's going to be challenging. How do you go from having a 750 to a 700? I don't know that any state has transitioned yet where, you think of the difficulty of what would happen if a product like Jack Daniel's went from 750 to 700 in the same store on the same shelf. How do you manage the process?
Yeah, that
Yeah.
sounds like a headache.
Well, we did it. We went through this in, I'm going to say 1990 in Australia, but there was no scanning. So replica bottles went at the back of the shelf, got to the front of the shelf. You could hardly tell that it was a different size. And the price didn't change.
Free social media too. I just see the
No,
social media
absolutely.
firestorm when this happens, if it happens.
Absolutely. Yeah. It would be considered, shrinkflation.
Exactly. That's
Yeah.
exactly the word going through my head.
Yeah. And I don't think anybody wants to see that. So
No.
that will be a challenge. But new products coming in, there are, scotches, Japanese whiskies that now have access into the US that didn't have before.
So we've talked about some of the things that are doing well. What about things that are in decline, like spirits, wine, of course, beer, what are you seeing there?
We don't track beer at all, and we have seen across the whole country wine declining. At this point, it's a little interesting that control state decline is about half the decline in both spirits and wine of what the open states are. Sometimes it could be because we are in control states what's called a lagging indicator, where it happens a little bit more slowly in control. So it's possible that we could decline at a greater rate, but at this point, it's been relatively stable for the last few months. We haven't seen any dramatic change in what's
Good.
happening. Some of the categories that have changed, Scotch, unfortunately, is in pretty serious decline. Even Irish whiskey has declined for the first time, really, in the 30 years I've been here. So we're just seeing, I think, a little bit of shift of category. And in the wine, I think even more so than the spirits, it's some of the other impacts, the health impacts that may be doing it. The increase in the number of people having that GLP-1 type drug, Ozempic, Wegovy, I think that's possibly impacted the wine more than the spirits, in so much that the people that only had one glass of wine with dinner at night, maybe a couple, and perhaps you shared a bottle or you had a bag in a box and just took one glass out, and they go to nothing, and you times that by 12% of the population that's on the GLP-1 drug. That's a pretty big impact.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's huge.
Speaking of health issues, what about low and no alcohol products? Do you have any data on that or anything you're seeing?
No, not really. Well, low alcohol, we could pretty much bring in with the RTDs. No alcohol, unfortunately, we don't track it.
Sure.
Many of our states can't sell it as part of the legality of a control state. They can only sell spirits or only sell beverage alcohol. And with the others, but we are seeing a pretty big increase, or I anecdotally hearing a big increase, especially in the on-premise for the seedlip type products that are non-alc, tequila substitute or gin and so on, all for both health reasons and everything else. So I think that will have somewhat of an impact on the on-premise, and it's good for the on-premise. They go from selling a Diet Coke at $3.50 to a mocktail at $14 or $15.
Exactly.
The Vibe conference, which was a month ago, which is on-premise national account conference, there's a lot of information about the growth of the non-alc and mocktail products and the people that are willing to spend that money on it. Now, I got to say, if you went back 20 years and you said, "Oh, I've got a non-alc or a mocktail on here, and it's the same price as buying a gin and tonic," how many people would buy it?
Yeah,
I think that's changed.
totally agreed. What do you see as the overall state of the alcohol industry right now? And again, I know we're unable to predict the future with these tariffs, but especially given the potential threat of tariffs.
I don't think it's going. I don't think if something's gone up by whatever that percentage is, it's not 25% straight on top of your retail price.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to automatically turn people away from buying a good bottle of bourbon or tequila. I don't think that will have that impact. I think we're probably in a correction phase. If we have a chart that we look at for control states that maps, here's what happened with COVID and the rapid growth both originally off-premise, but then it went to on-premise as well as COVID ended. In comparison to what would have happened had we not had COVID and things just continued on at the 4% range, those lines met in December
Yeah.
last year. I don't believe it's doom and gloom. I think we're in a mild correction phase. That correction could be 6 months, it could be a year. I don't think it's the end of the world for beverage alcohol. I think trends will change a little bit, but trends have always changed. Go back 20 years, tequila isn't what it is today. Scotch was booming, Canadian whiskey was gigantic. It's moved down. Irish whiskey took some of that. It's going to be a continual shift. What's the next thing? If we knew that, I probably wouldn't be working for NABCA. I'd be making a ton of money somewhere.
So, before we close, is there anything you wanted to tell us about the operations side of NABCA?
Well, we're going through our own tech stack upgrade. We've been running on the same system for years. We need to really upgrade what we're doing. It'll have some impact on how we operate because the new system will be able to add things into our database from health and legal and such that we haven't been able to do before. It's been purely dollars and cents and bottles and cases. So this will give us some really different ways to work with industry and with the community. So we're looking forward to that. We are probably 6 months off having that completed, and we've been going for more than a year already. Our discovery took nearly a year to work through because the intricacies of how the data comes in, it's not just a store or a wholesaler sending information. We collected individually from all 171 liquor boards in North Carolina. Half of them we collected weekly. We get on-premise data from the 200 resellers in Maine directly. So yeah, it's a pretty challenging process to manage that. But at the same time, we can see any bottle that's gone to any account in any control state any day. Pretty vital information.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's incredible. NABCA Annual is coming up. That's the big annual conference for the control states, an enormous conference, the industry's biggest conference. It's happening next month at Gaylord Palms in Orlando. And the question on everyone's mind is, are you going down the humongous water slide there again
I
this
did
year?
it. I did it last time. So
Is it
I'll
a
go
one
with
and
you.
done?
Amy Grolman, who's our vice president of MIS and data. I went to, was challenged by her two daughters to go down the slide. So I did it. And it's one of those trapdoor ones where the
Yes.
climb to the top is scarier than the drop.
Yes, very true. I did it as well last year, and I should also say that I did it after having a little bit of tequila, which probably was helping my confidence, but did not feel good in my stomach on the way down.
Right.
I was fine afterwards, but boy, that's a large water slide, just for
It
anyone.
sure is.
If anyone who ever goes to Gaylord Palms in Florida, we also suggested give it a try, but maybe not with a stomach full of tequila.
Yeah.
Don't be like Kyle, in other
Yeah, don't be like
words.
Kyle.
Ever.
Yeah, it's good advice.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you again, David, for joining us.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. We always appreciate it. And thanks to all of you out there for listening to another episode of On and Off. Join us next time when we'll talk about yet another fascinating topic that spans the retail and restaurant worlds. Until then, cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks.
If you enjoyed the On and Off podcast, please hit the subscribe button. Also, you can find more great content at cheersonline.com and beverage-dynamics.com, including recipes, product reviews, and interviews with the movers and shakers of the beverage alcohol industry. You can also sign up for our free weekly e-newsletters for both publications on our websites. Cheers!